You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, the Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Emergence. Now, the brief synopsis is: a series of puzzling events on and off the holodeck lead the crew of the Enterprise to a surprising conclusion. The ship is pregnant, knocked up by some deadbeat, derelict, good-for-nothing garbage scow. I'm sorry. The ship is creating its own offspring. The crew has to assist with the arduous process to ensure the survival of the emerging life form, as well as their own. Yeah. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And tonight with us, we have one guest. We were hoping for two, but... we have a 50% success rate on the guest tonight. So we're talking to Chris from
South Carolina.
South Carolina. See, every time you come on, I think, is it north or is it south? Is it north or is it south? Okay.
I'm even worse about the Midwest. Is it Minnesota? Is it Missouri? I don't know. It's one of those way out there. North Dakota. One of the lake places, Michigan.
Yeah.
They're all the same to me in my head.
Yeah, and currently we have Mississippi and Oklahoma that are guests of our fine city here in Omaha. We have the Men's College World Series going on, and nice. This is game two of the championship series. Well, yesterday, Ole Miss beat Oklahoma. Today, if they do it again, it's over. They win the champion. If Oklahoma does a unexpected and beats them, then it will be 1-1, and they'll have to have sudden death tomorrow. Now, as a guy who's driving for Uber and Lyft and all those guys making a ton of money right now, which do you think I want? A game tomorrow or no game tomorrow?
Sudden death.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm thinking, as soon as I get off of this podcast, I'm going to head back to the old horse and run down. Gallop down and do more work. So,
you got a train, you can fit more passengers.
Exactly, I wish. So, okay, Chris, thank you for coming on for tonight's episode, and let's go into dinner. This is the 26th episode of Season 7 of TNG. It was released on May 9th, 1994, written and teleplayed by Joe Manosky and Brannon Braga, and directed by Cliff the Bullion Bull. Tonight's guest stars include David Huddleston as the conductor, Vinny Argyro, I hope, as the hitman, Thomas Capacci as the engineer, poor guy, Arlie Reed as the hayseed. What the heck does the hayseed mean?
It's a pejorative for a southerner.
Oh.
He was the guy very excited about doing the jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, yes, he did, didn't he? Yes, okay. All right. And there's a whole host of uncredited co-stars, and I forgot to look if Majel was the computer again tonight. So, how about... I think we could still do like a brief thought. Very, very brief. Don't you think, Chris? Keep that there, or do you think I should
Yeah, man.
Roll with
That'd
it?
Be fine.
Well, then why don't you start us off?
I think that this episode is very intriguing and strange. You think it's going to be just your regular holodeck mess up episode, and then you end up talking about living beings and considering the concept of what's living and what do we need to, what's sentient and how do we deal with that? You know, some of that stuff plays in there too. So it was a little, I tried to do a little one up on it. So I was intrigued by this episode. I thought it was very interesting. And I did not remember it from my first couple of watch throughs.
Okay. How about you, Doc? What'd you think?
I mean, I'm going to reply to Chris on this. I mean, really? Were you? I find this a real slog to get through. This is the first use of the word slog on the recorded part of the podcast. Mm-hmm. this doesn't land well. I don't know. I look forward to discussion coming on ahead, but I don't know. To me, it just feels like it's. They must have been an episode short this season, and mm-hmm. they just needed something to fill the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Said that last time I was on. So mm-hmm. were they two episodes short?
They're about a season and a half short this season, aren't they? Mm. It's a little bit painful.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It's rather silly. It's just another brick in the wall, as another brick in the wall, as your fellow Londonites Pink Floyd would say.
Are they London?
Yes, Pink Floyd is from London. Yeah. I just looked it up to make sure I was right, but yeah, they're from London. You know what else is from London? The 5 o'clock train. Picard and Data are in the holodeck, where Data is once again working on his acting chops by trying to take on Shakespeare in the play The Tempest. But suddenly, they're interrupted by the 5 o'clock train to London, forcing Picard and Data to get out of the way, causing the good captain and good android to fall. Who got hurt? Yes, correct. The captain got hurt. So, we find the train that almost hit them is the Orient Express from Dr. Crusher's program. Now, how can that happen? Well, like I always say, Dr. Crusher and Captain Picard interface more than they lead us to believe. So, I can believe that their holodeck fantasies are starting to merge or not. Maybe not. What are your thoughts?
Sorry, are you suggesting that they're having a relationship here, those two?
Are you suggesting they're not? I mean, they have tea a lot, I suppose. That doesn't always lead to other things, but I can't believe in 7 years him and the doctor haven't, you know.
I refuse to walk down this path anymore, but I like to think that they did have a relationship, but, you know.
Crush is too good for him. Make Crush is too young for him.
Nah.
Nah? What?
No way.
They end up married in all the novels. Just saying.
Yeah, they do get married, yeah. Well, I don't know, since Picard fixed that, is it true or not?
Picard definitely changed all of that. None of those books matter anymore. That's why I refuse to have any conversation about it. Because now I just want to chuck all my Star Trek novels and never read another one. Of course, they couldn't keep in account all the stuff, and that's why they never wanted to make these series anyway, right? Like, for a while. Because so many people had gotten into these books and read them and spent money on them. And, you know, they were fun stories while I read them. But now they kind of feel like a waste of time.
I never got into the Star Trek books. For some reason, I don't see the point. I'm so used to just watching the adventure that, I mean, to sit there and just read about Star Trek, it does. Maybe I just lack imagination.
Well, I'm a strong defender of pulp fiction. Mm. I think that it's important. Like, if you love a thing and you want to spend more time in it, like, It's not important. I shouldn't say important. It doesn't have any real import. It's like, it is the most garbage of garbage fiction. On the spiral of nerddom, it's near the bottom, right? Right above those people who cosplay or like dress as the characters and try to live their own books, right? That's when you know you've reached full nerd.
Careful.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that's when you know you've reached, like, you are at the bottom of the nerd spiral. You are the center. You are all of it.
It's right? Called the center of the vortex, you mean.
Same thing.
I should point out that despite me reckoning that Dr. Crusher's too young for Captain Picard, Patrick Stewart's actual wife is 30 years younger than Gates McFadden. So, yeah, shows you what I know.
Wow. Okay, yeah. And you know,
she's
Chris...
She's younger than you, Lou.
Younger than me?
She's nearly as young as me. Crikey.
Eesh. Crikey is right. Okay, well, Chris, you know, as far as the nerddom thing, there was a topic we did on the Lou Trek Show. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but you've had too much Star Trek win. And one of the things I came up with, I rather liked it as well. You've had too much Star Trek when you're standing next to a Ferengi in the post office and you don't even flinch. That's how you know you've had too much Star Trek.
Then put me down for too much Star Trek.
Yeah, because I'd be standing right next to a Klingon, even with the Batleth and Kapla, sir. I'll take two stamps.
I don't flinch either. I'd smile warmly and nod like, yeah, man. I'm currently reading a book on ethics and economics, and I use Quark as my bookmark. So that's
yeah, that's a perfect idea. Hey, you got that right. So the Orient Express, why do you think Dr. Crusher likes it so much? Do you think she goes on frequent trips, and where does she go?
No, it's all the kind of a murder mystery nonsense that she's into, right? She's like, I don't know if they've explicitly stated Agatha Christie, but she's like the Agatha Christie comic fan. Is she not?
I don't recall her saying that before, but... Yeah, I don't recall her going for the murder mystery thing. I could be wrong.
But why have I just invented that in my own headcanon? I just always assumed that she was. What?
It makes sense. Orient Express is that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you could be perfectly right. I just don't recall ever hearing that or seeing her in her. So... It throws the guys to the ground. What could have caused it? Well, we find that it's a flaw in the always perfect holodeck. I mean, the holodeck malfunctions, they're so rare, aren't they? Like, for every hour of holodeck usage, another hour is spent, you know, off the holodeck. In other words, what I'm saying is I'm being facetious. The holodeck sucks, really. I mean, it's a death trap waiting to happen. So where are we today? We're in the McCorda system. And did you notice how I spelled things out in my little thing today? That, because if I was to put that together, I'm not sure. McCorda system for a survey of the system for future Federation colony sites. So this is an interesting thing. Help me here. How do they determine what's a good planet? Just because it has oxygen? Or what?
How do they determine what a Class M planet is?
No, what's a suitable planet for us to, what, colonate? Does it just have to be oxygen, or is there, there's got to be more to it than that?
Yeah, I would imagine it has to be habitable and has to be able to make its own food, especially in deep space, right?
Yeah, plants. Yeah, that makes sense.
Flora and fauna.
I mean, I don't think it's right that you don't... okay, you know, we're used to Earth's Earth's atmosphere in terms of the composition. So even if it is like still got oxygen, we breathe a certain percentage of oxygen in the atmosphere, right? So we're used to a certain type of levels. When you go kind of like up the mountains, it gets, you know, it gets heavy for people. The other thing, of course, is that we're used to the gravity. We're also used to, you know, the 24-hour day cycle. And none of these things are a given, even if life does exist on other planets. It could have oxygen, it could have life, but it could be, you know, -2 degrees for a half the year. And that's not exactly pleasant for us.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay. But I suppose it does raise the question of, you know, what do you reckon the most extreme planet we've colonized is? I mean, assuming here for a second, we're not going to do like the Genesis thing and it becomes perfectly suitable for everything that we need. But instead, we have to actually make the best of the planet, and you can't really get around, you know, the gravity and stuff. Do you reckon there are some planets or some colonies in the Federation where you've got like 2 times gravity or 3 times gravity, and these guys are just, you know, much buffer than everyone else and just used to it? And I don't know, maybe there's another planet full of a lot less physically impressive species that are sitting there in like 0.2 gravity. Well, didn't they need to lift the muscle?
Didn't they explore some of that with it's in the early Deep Space Nine, right? With
Melora.
No, it's an early TNG.
No, you mean the lady in the wheelchair.
It wasn't Deep Space Nine, yeah.
Yeah. That was her own planet, though, right?
Right. But you're saying all the terraform planets.
Yeah. But it does raise the question. I mean, it's astonishing that after everyone that we meet, everyone seems to have pretty much the same gravity, except for one species.
Right. And breathe the same type of air.
Yeah.
Except for that species, the blue guys.
The guy that the Wesley's friend at the academy, right? The
yeah.
Ben. Benzo.
Yeah.
As soon as you said Ben, that's Benzo. Okay, got it. Okay, well, we're gonna go ahead and do this survey. We're gonna see how it looks, but no, we're not, because all of a sudden the warp drive just kicks in. Someone in a hurry? Solution is to do an emergency warp core shutdown, which, you know, that's going to stand them by the side of the road for about a week until AAA can come get them. Suddenly, the ship just drops out of warp, which is really good timing. Good job, Mr. LaForge. Oh. Now, why wouldn't LaForge say, "You're welcome, sir," and just go on about his day? But no. He doesn't want to be the miracle worker. Turns out, he doesn't have enough Scots in him. That's right. Turns out, it had nothing to do with him. It just seemed to happen by itself. And making that mystery a little stranger is, had the ship stayed at warp for another 1.7 seconds more, it would have been blown into little tiny micro pieces spread across several solar systems. At least I'd imagine that. Before we go on, Doc, you're my brain in this outfit.
Okay.
Am I right? If they're traveling at warp 9, which I believe they were, and they blow up, do they just like become little tiny micro pieces that several star systems will get? Or what would happen? They're not going to stay at warp. So what would happen if they blow up at warp?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Come on, Doc. Tell us the physics of literally folding space in half and flying through it.
Yeah. It depends how powerful the explosion is, I suppose, right?
Enough to blow up the ship.
Yeah, but does it blow it up quickly or slowly? I know that there are some instances in Trek where things fall out of warp, right? And I always feel that... Okay, so the issue about the warp drive, we don't really talk about how the warp drive works, as in the folding of space. I mean, I know it's called warp, and you kind of have to infer that it's doing that, and it sounds like it should need to do that in order to get around, you know, the speed limits on the general relativity. But we never really we're never really told that explicitly, and in particular when you talk about like the warper bubble and stuff, I'm not entirely sure how that's expected to work. I think a lot of the visualization of the warp drive is basically just, you know, one big rocket, right? You know, one big engine that pushes you very fast. And you have instances like in Encounter at Farpoint where it is believed that if you separate the saucer section from the main drive, then the saucer section will continue at warp, despite it not having any form of propulsion. And then, you know, the star drive can kind of turn around, and then the saucer section can keep going for whatever reason, for however long. It's never clear, which kind of suggests it's a kind of, you know, conservation of momentum kind of thing. But to me, it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, all of this is just to say is that I think the way they'll depict it is that if something was to be blown up whilst at warp, they would probably put across some kind of conservation of momentum, which means you'd be spread out across 50 or so different star systems as it slowly slows down. But I don't think that's how really the physics works.
Well, the Soliton wave was able to keep a ship with no warp going for... I mean, they had to disrupt the wave. Otherwise, it would have just kept going forever. Where did it get its energy to keep going? What?
Certainly.
Dilithium and tritanium.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have something to announce at this point of the episode, by the way. Which is, I mean, I've got a few kind of nitpicks about the first scene with Data and how I think it's showing kind of zero growth in Data or negative growth in Data since his previous escapades into the holodeck to do Shakespeare. It certainly doesn't feel like we're 4 years along from when he ended up in it was in the Defector, right?
Yes.
When we first see this, it doesn't feel like it's like 4 years of study. You know, 4 years. By this point, he should be starting his PhD in performance arts. If we assume that he started back in the Defector, and he still doesn't know how to light a stage, so it feels like he's not progressed at all. But let me just park that for a second. I don't know if I'm alone in this. I find it really hard to get behind this idea that we have been, someone has moved us, some being, some intelligence has moved us, and had we not been moved within a few seconds, we would have been destroyed. Because to me, it feels like it just completely sucks any agency or any kind of control of the actual show out of our main characters. And I appreciate that it might even be true, by the way. It might be true that your characters can just go bang for no reason through some kind of failure in the containment field. But I just feel that, you can't have that as your setup. And as soon as they do it, I kind of think, what am I supposed to be looking at here? You know, either... You know, these guys have no control over anything, and they've been shown to be completely out of the loop, right? So what are we going to watch? We're going to watch, I think it's your expression, Lou, you know, we're going to watch a chimpanzee try to learn calculus for the rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, the particular idea that, had they not mentioned the, it's a good job we jumped, otherwise... we would have been blown up. I probably would have been able to see past it. But all of a sudden now, I'm having almost to believe in a super intelligence out, you know, so beyond the control of the main characters that you might as well just sum it up to magic. And I find that really frustrating. That's the main problem that I think I have with this episode. I kind of check out at this point.
Oh.
Anyway, why am I wrong?
Well, I mean, space is always dangerous, and I took it as we're in the last episodes, like, they could do something crazy, so let's build some tension by, like, hey, something might be out to get you. Hey, maybe Q's here, maybe something else. So, like, I think at that point, if you're watching this for the first time, and I think that they probably didn't, I mean, they knew that this would be in syndication, right? So I guess they intended for people to watch it again, but in my opinion, it didn't suck me out of the episode. I was just like, well, that's rough. Like, they could have bit it, and that would have been a great ending, right? Here, right at the end, seventh season.
Well, like 4 minutes into the episode, are they really right. going
to... So what are you going to really do? Gonna... You dig your way out, or somebody's going to save the day, or you all crash and burn into oblivion. I don't know. But it didn't bother me. It definitely didn't suck me out of the episode.
It's like us getting like to the second to last episode of the Battle Bridge and saying, nope, no more. I'm just walking away.
Which, I mean, could have happened, right?
Like, yeah, touch and go. It's touch and go. But we don't have a contract.
But it was a dropped line. I felt like it was just there to quickly build tension. The stuff with Data, though, I somewhat agree with you on, but they had to have somebody speaking the Tempest. Like, somebody had to, like, make reference to this thing that is, you know, it's a, like, kind of they have to seed their theme or whatever their, like, lesson they're trying to teach or idea they're trying to infuse this in early on, and so they had to do it somehow, and Shakespeare's as right as any, I think, to get the idea kind of rolling.
No, sure, and I certainly don't begrudge the attempt to do that, and in particular, there's a huge amount of similar thread in both in First Contact and also Wrath of Khan,
right?
But you don't start the episodes with Data having, you know, put it on a play and actually coming across as season one, season two Data.
Right. There's not a huge amount of dumpy in that way, right? Like, all the characters, they kind of are elastic in that way. They will draw them back and kind of, for lack of a better word, retard a lot of the growth that they've given them up to that point.
Yeah, no, which is kind of a bunch of sucker. Our sensors were now designed to detect Data Flux distortions. So you are right. And it's, by the way, I was happy to let that go. It's look, I'm a Data fan. I like a lot of Data isms, and it's perfectly fine. If we had remained at our original position, 1.7 seconds. But does it look like it's the distortion?
Well, I would say I agree with you. I don't love it, right? But to me, it's one of those minor quibbles. Like, I would have, like, bring it up, yes, but like, it, whatever, they do this all the time. Like, I either I'm gonna hate Star Trek because of it, or I'm still gonna love Star Trek and like just have to roll my eyes whenever that happens.
But let me ask you guys this: wouldn't it be nice for the ship to be so smart that if it detected some kind of theta flux distortion building up around, it could report it to the crew? You know, attention, there's a theta flux, but by the time the crew react, they're already gone. So wouldn't it be nice for the ship to be able to actually detect it and act on it quickly?
Well, then we'd be watching Farscape.
Wow. Farscape.
But okay, Lou, it's a good idea, right? And I have no problem at all if, for example, you know, Geordi had spent either a bit of this episode or maybe an episode a few episodes back talking that he's going to put in more programming into the computer that allows this kind of, you know, auto eject, right? Mm-hmm. If he had decided to to be the spark that kicked it off, I wouldn't have a problem with that. It's the fact that it comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And also, by the time, I don't know, I mean, obviously the situation kind of evolves by the time you get to the end of the episode, and there's a lot more clear indication that there's something going on with the Enterprise. But at this point, there's no external visible source that this should be possible. Mm. And it's like, it's a good job it happened, and it happened now, and it happened, you know, just in time. And also this flight response. They kind of tried to suggest that it would be something, you know, natural and on instinct that you would use, that you would learn. But I think that this is far more sophisticated than what they end up talking about only a couple of scenes later when they're talking about the neural net that's forming and things like that. So the behavior that you're seeing, first of all, it comes out of nowhere, and second of all, I think it's far more advanced than other stuff that they then later explain is the one we're developing into.
Now,
So I connected back to they're constantly hooking data up to the computer. And so maybe I connected some dots that the episode does not rightly connect, but I just put those things together and said, oh, well, maybe the ship is doing this because it is a very advanced AI. Maybe it somehow, through being connected to data, has picked up this ability and had this desire or whatever. I mean, data even had this desire, right? Doesn't this have, like, resonances of Lal? Was that her name?
Yeah, Lal. Yeah.
Pulled that one from way back. But yeah, so like there's resonances of that here too. The ship is trying to create another ship, another life. Like, and we don't know that at this time, you're right. But like also at this point, we're still like investigating the mystery of it all. And so in the middle, when they mentioned Data's network, I just kind of did that work for them. I guess they didn't really do any heavy lifting on that.
All right, well,
as I'm remembering it vaguely.
Right. I mean, we didn't get to the intelligence part. I mean, just, you know, as a feature. So, Doc, it sounds like as long as it's in the owner's manual and you can read that it's there, you're okay with that. But to me, not only did it save the ship from getting destroyed by going to warp, it saved the ship by dropping out of warp at just the right times. I look at that as a car that will self-break so you don't slam into somebody. They make them. We got them.
Yeah, but it's a car that self-breaks.
Yeah.
When there are no brakes in the car, right? It's like several iterations before you get there. It's like a... I don't know. It's several generations before you have any idea.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Doc. So you're saying this is a massive leap. Just out of nowhere. I got you. So that makes sense to me. And maybe I just gave them the benefit of the doubt because it's like Star Trek technology, you know, like it's always doing weird stuff. I don't know. I didn't think about it that deeply, but yeah, that would pull me out. Now I'm going to rewatch it, Doc, and hate it.
Hold on. No, see, I'm not even talking about the fact that it actually happened. I think it would be interesting that it could be a feature on the, you know, 2023 model vehicle that it can all of a sudden slam the gas to get you because you're going to get T-boned here, but still be smart enough to hit the brake in time for you not to hit the kid crossing the road. I mean, I think that'd be an interesting feature on the ship. How many times do they just suddenly explode? You think they'd have a few seconds to beam everybody off from Captain Donald Volley's ship? You know, do you want us to beam any non-essential personnel? No, I don't think so. I think I'll take them with me. You know, I mean, that was a pretty good voice, wasn't it? No, I think I'll take them with me. So, I don't know. I'd like to see that kind of feature on the ship to save itself. And when it saves itself, it saves everybody on board. So, all right. Unless you got more, we're going to head on.
No, this is okay. So this is I think I've used this analogy before, but this is when they talk about this particular thing is the episode falling out of the tree, and then when they get into the holodeck, it's them hitting the branch, every single branch on the way down. But come on, let's go for it.
So in other words, they didn't hit the ugly stick; they hit every branch on the way down. Okay, gotcha. All right, well, it turns out the ship is developing some kind of circuit nodes all over itself, and they all seem to be connected to Holodeck 3. So why don't we go to the Holodeck 3 and just disable them? Oh, if only they were that easy. But it's a good idea. Go back to the Holodeck and see what's going on. So the holodeck has been shut down, but no, it's not. It's suddenly re-engaged itself and is taking the crew on a wild train ride to Vertiform City. It's only a few kilometers outside of London, by the way.
Why do you keep bringing up London?
I don't
London
know.
Has nothing to do with this.
I don't know why.
Do you guys not have trains in the US?
Oh, nope. Yeah. No,
actually, we do.
Yeah.
One of my favorite board games is actually about the Transcontinental Railroad. And there's a version for Europe and England as well. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
You can drive around Omaha and never get stopped by a train, even though we do have tracks. It seems like they know when to use them. You go across the river to Council Bluffs, Iowa, and forget about it. You're going to get stopped by a train everywhere you go. So, no. Yeah. The crew encounter very strange beings on the train, I should say. Characters. Not unlike, you know, any normal train you take to London, right? I'm sorry. You can imagine. When things couldn't get any weirder, train's engineer comes to the aid of the crew because they left their tickets at home. Why did they kill the engineer?
Well, they probably assumed at first that he was just going to die of diabetes. Oh, no, that was the guy walking through. Never mind. Sorry.
They didn't kill him. When you say they, who do you mean?
Hold on here. Why not? Yeah. All of them characters were annoying. But hold on. I need to actually do something here.
Let me ask a question. What's the point of the Enterprise putting together this visualization and characters? What's the point of this? Other than if Picard literally asked, like, before the show started, you know, computer, can you put together something that will last about 40 minutes? We need to entertain people. I mean, really, what's going on here? What clever thing am I supposed to look in this holodeck program and see a thread to either solve the mystery or to keep me entertained or to parallel the story that's going on the outside? Because I don't get it. Maybe I'm too stupid to get it. But what on earth's going on here?
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you know, there's paper people being cut, the conductor coming along, punching everybody's ticket 17 times during their trip. And then, you know, you have the engineer, the guy in his overalls that comes to defend the crew because they don't have their tickets and they're just trying to help. And next thing you know, you got the hitman coming through the door and shooting the engineer in the back. So who's running the train? No, it runs itself. All right. So why do you, okay, yeah, I guess we kind of did discuss all these goofy people on this train. And they're all going to
They're the intellect and the imagination, right? So they're using the holodeck to speak to the kind of the emergence of the thought life of this this being, right? So that's the way that I took it anyways.
Which also is a little bit of Dr. Crusher's imagination, since she made the program. These people could be part of it. Right?
But also, like, the program with the Western guy when he comes in, right? Like, that's from Worf and his kid. You know, that guy looked almost exactly like Data looked in that episode. Hmm. You know, so, like, there's these little pieces of different things.
I don't understand how they have a train full of people, but they don't have anyone from Riker's, like, adult program turn up. I mean, yeah. Really?
There's no sexuality for machines. That part of their psychology is cut off.
I mean, we're talking about the Enterprise wishing to reproduce. I mean, shouldn't it all be like, you know, I don't know what Riker is into, but I'm sure a lot of other people into some very weird stuff. We don't see any of it.
And the knight in shining armor? I mean, I could see Dr. Crusher programming that.
Okay, can I? Another thing that slightly pains me on this one, which is that it feels like they've gone to the prop department and then they've decided what they should put on the screen rather than the other way around, right? Of course, I recognize that Star Trek is a TV show. I recognize that they make this TV show. Okay, I'm not silly. But it feels like instead of wanting to tell a story and then going to build the props or building the sets, this was back to front. It's like, what do we have available? What does the set, you know, how have we currently dressed the set back, back out back behind where we're filming today. Oh, it's, you know, it's mid-60s Chicago. We'll take it. I mean, it just feels like it's completely backwards, this. And when you talk about knight in shining armor, yeah, they didn't commission a knight suit to be built for this. They didn't commission a set on a train to be built for this. And I don't think they commissioned the conductor or the guy that's wearing overalls or any of that. It's just stuff that they found. And that, again, makes me... It's slightly cringy. I find it a little bit hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like watching two people do a puzzle, huh? Go on, Chris.
Sorry, my kid was running through the room, too. I don't even know what I was going to say. I was going to respond to some of that. Oh, like...
Shut up, James.
Yes, Doc. Yes, of course. And I know that you, like, but it's... Like, we... I guess we've given this episode too much, so at this point you're just done with it. All those facts also annoy you. But, like, come on. I mean, it's a cheap TV show made on a back lot. Not cheap. I mean, they spent money on it, right, to build all these amazing sets they built for the Enterprise. But, like, come on. I don't know. I just don't... It doesn't upset me at all. I think that this part is actually... This part is actually the intriguing bit, is that this AI... And I wish they would actually done more with it. That's my annoyance, is that there's not a lot of... You got the puzzle maker and you've got, like, other things, but there's not a lot of conversation about how this thing is developing thought. And there's so much to talk about around that. Like, the development of thought, the development of ethics, the development of, like, all these other things. Like, it pulled them out of sudden death. Did it do that solely for self-preservation? What, like, there's just some of these conversations aren't as rich as I feel like they could be. And this is has access to absolutely all of philosophy.
You're very correct on that. And also, there's a bit where they're talking about, okay, I don't know if it's consciousness that they're talking about or something else, but let's assume he's mentioning consciousness. But there's a bit where Data talks about consciousness or whatever it is, and he goes, oh, it's an emergent property of the network or of the system. And look, this could be a very interesting philosophical discussion, because we don't have a clue where consciousness comes from or self-awareness or sentience or any of that. And it could be an emergent property of a sufficiently complicated system. But he kind of just says, yeah, it is, and then moves on. And it's very much like, you know, it's just thrown away, right? There's no real... And I don't know if they are trying to get to the point that in Star Trek time, all of this is trivial. But I didn't think that's where they were headed. I just think that they didn't want to talk about it. And instead...
Well, I don't know that they could. I mean, who wrote this episode, right? Like, can Brandon Braga really bring himself to consider, deeper... like, we've seen his episodes, and some of them are really good, but they're not super thoughtful. They're not like anything from the first season of Star Trek, you know, the original series. And it takes some of those other guys to really dig at the depths of some of the more intriguing aspects of life and living through the guise of this lens of Star Trek. So, mm-hmm. So my annoyance, and this, so I started off this episode, and I didn't want to give away, like, how I truly felt about this episode, but it is intriguing. It is intriguing, but it is the promise of something very, very cool and Star Trek-y, and then just, like, utterly laying down a flop. Like, you're in a poker game, and you're pretending like you have everything. Like, you have four aces. You're about to win the game. And then when you lay them down, you have a two, a three, and a four, right? And that's it. Unsuited. and the next number is a tens, because you don't even have a straight, right? So you just got nothing. You're busted. Everything is awful. And so it's at this point where we're in the train, and, like, they're all kind of barking at each other, and he asks for the ticket 47 times, where I'm like, oh, they're not going to do that. They're not going to have the episode that I thought that this was going to be when I first met the people on the train. They're not even going to attempt it. And that's when my annoyance came, not because of the set props or any of the other stuff, but because they completely failed on the premise. Just failed to launch.
So the thing about the ticket, by the way, is that they first turn up and they don't have a ticket. They turn up a second time and they don't have a ticket. And he gets really, really angry with them. Said, look, we see you. We know what you're doing. Stay out. And then on the third time, he's like, look, I've warned you. And they say, oh, well, we've got a ticket. And then he's okay with it. And it feels to me like it's like, if we actually think about what this is here, which is like the enterprise development of consciousness, so it's like a computer, becoming sentient. So,
right.
And it's like hacking into the system, being kicked out, hacking in again, being kicked out, and then hacking in a third time, and then saying, no, no, honestly, we're good. Look at our ticket. And it's like, how is the conductor that dumb to not recognize that these are the same people and that, you know, I mean, either the Enterprise wants them there or not. If it doesn't, it shouldn't be using the ticket as the leverage, because
right.
it's like the simplest puzzle to solve.
Right. Yeah, it's like if Agent Smith was an idiot from the Matrix.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Mm. Okay. Okay, so after a brief discussion in the observation lounge, we all return to the holotech just in time because it stopped at Keystone City, which is mighty convenient since the hitman's got a brick. This very important piece of concrete, I suppose, that he needs to apply.
Okay, let me wind Chris up a bit. So what's this about and why is it important?
The brick in the wall. Why?
What are they trying to show here?
I don't know. Taxi tries to run over Data twice.
Bro, it's it's beyond me. What is it supposed to be?
The idea of the brick or what?
So I guess like they're talking about. All right, so it's the most basic, like, barest, most minimal thing it could possibly be, right? Because it seems to be that this construction of the self or this construction of the being has to have this keystone, this very important element, right, that must go in to make it complete. But what does complete even mean? They haven't laid any of the foundation for what this means. They haven't laid any foundation for what the brick could possibly even be. The only conversation about it was, this is very important. Keep your hands off it. You know, like, that's it. That was, there's nothing else to that conversation. There was no like, oh man, this brick represents the work of thousands of years of whatever or anything like that. There was nothing, not even a hint, not even a suggestion. And so that's where, and so when they put it in, I'm like, oh, that could be cool, I guess, but maybe not too. I don't know.
They've done none of the heavy lifting, right? There's no setup here.
Hmm.
It's just that they thought it'd be. I mean, okay. I almost don't want to say this out loud. It almost feels what a stupid person's idea of what a clever script should be.
Hmm. You're saying, right? I did this. You're blaming me for this. No,
it just feels like it's. It feels like a, oh yeah, this will work. But then you think about it for more than a second, and you go, well, how does that connect? And why is the payoff satisfying, or anything like that? Or how was it telegraphed ahead of time? Or, you know, what is the fundamental message that's trying to be communicated here that is not getting through to our characters, but we can see upon the eighth rewatch of the episode? And I just don't think there's anything here at all. I think they thought that they needed to stop off at this city because they had the set out back.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, I'm terrible today.
Yeah,
no, I'm, honestly, it comes off like a really bad political message at the end, right? Like they make the earmark sentience, and they earmark like a dedication to sentient life, and that being important and special in some way, and they allow this thing to live, and they do everything they can to help it, and like that's it. That's the full story, and they don't deal with the really interesting part, you know, which is how does a machine even become sentient? Like, that's what everybody throughout the last 70 years, I mean, this is the 90s, right? So, like, they've been thinking about this since computers were a thing. Asimov's written books on books on books about this type of thing. Like, there's a whole litany of really solid, good thought into what this would be or what this would look like, sitting there waiting for them to just go read one of them, like go look into what Asimov thought about that type of thing, or any of those writers that were writing in the 50s and the 60s when computers became ubiquitous in high government, right? Like, they just don't deal with any of it, right? They don't, and it's strange to me. And Doc, it's like, maybe it's what you're saying, like maybe they're just like, well, that's been done, like we don't want to retread that. But also, I would love for Star Trek to retread that a little bit, see what their characters and their, you know, this episode might do with that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
because that's what this is about.
All right, so Data's using a manhole cover to access a holodeck controls until he's almost run over by a taxi. Twice, by the way. The brick is delivered, and shortly after that, they continue their investigation into this thing that's at in the cargo bay, 5. But soon, the ship starts losing its structural integrity, which we know never happens. It can lose it, but it never loses it, really, you know. Does that make sense? And then, while that's happening, the mystery on the holodeck is being more unraveled. So am I getting that this life form, because it's not getting the particles, Verderon particles that it's been getting from the star is draining. And because of that, this life form is dying since it's not getting enough of those particles. And because of that, everything on the holodeck is going to heck too. Am I right? Is that how that worked?
I have nothing to add to this conversation.
The brick was just put into the wall. It completed the brick, but now the wall falls down all over Worf and Troy. Why? Because the life form was dying? Chris, where'd he go?
Sorry, I was moving outside to get my grill started. Nobody here needs to know that. But so here again, I think it's one of those things where it's just like, accept this, right? And at this point, I'm like Doc. So before this, I'm like, oh, it's all good. Like they're gonna deliver on a cool premise, and I'm just gonna give them all the silliness and some of the things that maybe took me out of it for a second. But at this point, it's like, okay, the wall falls down, but the wall was kind of meaningless. The wall did not have, like, they never defined what this wall was supposed to be. They didn't even give me any hints. They didn't give me anything to kind of consider as the guy's taking the brick and putting it in. Like he didn't give me any little line of dialogue that, like, that was an allusion to some powerful thing. The only thing that I have to hold on to this whole time is just like that he invoked Shakespeare at the beginning, right? And used The Tempest, which is an interesting story about, you know, the demons coming out and like living amongst the earth and all, like there's all kinds of great Tempest lines that we think about and that people quote now, you know. And so I was assuming that it was going to come back to that kind of stuff, that we're going to think about the, like, Prospero and magic in the world and the imagination and how the imagination, you know, deals with the psyche and how that makes reality. But none of that came through. And so at this point, when the wall falls, I'm just like, well, what does this? I'm with you, right? I'm Lou, I'm asking the same exact question, but I don't think that they care to answer it. And I don't really think at this point that this episode is in any way delivering on any of the intrigue that it originally kind of got invested with.
Okay, so Chris, I think we're more or less on the same page, with the exception of I don't think the writers were aware that there was any potential for this to be intriguing at the start. I think you're giving them too much credit that they can, like, set up the premise with us and these questions. I mean, you mentioned some of the stuff that you would have liked people to touch upon. I mean, I feel like we go out of our way to sidestep it I like just don't see, you know, it's not, it doesn't feel like it's asking these questions. So it's not even that it's not answering the questions. I don't think they're even asking them.
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure is as you watch the brick wall fall, you see that it's actually, it looks like it's covering a doorway and an address of 1136, but who knows if that's an address or what it's for. Why would the bricks be covering the doorway? To keep them out? Keep somebody in?
So what I think it is, I think it's a cool thing to show. And I think it's, I think it literally starts and ends there.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I don't have enough in this episode to make me convinced that the guy that wrote it had, was having these thoughts. Or, you know, it just didn't feel like, it didn't feel, it didn't, it's...
Yeah,
it's. I find that this episode's a bit of strange, and I'm going to be slightly harsh here, and I'm going to borrow a quotation from someone else that I quite like this quotation. It feels like this episode was written. I mean, I'm not just surprised that this episode was written by people who wrote other episodes of Star Trek. I'm kind of surprised that this episode was written by people who had watched other episodes of Star Trek. You know, that's like how far out of you know, kind of like the standard we're talking about here.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Another thing about the brick wall falling, it takes Counselor Troy down, and Worf comes to her rescue. And instead of actually pulling her out of the continually falling bricks, he just lets her lay there and lets, you know, the bricks fall on her. So I thought that was kind of weird. The conductor derails the train because he believes they've been on the wrong track the whole time, which means the Verderon particles from the star is starting to decrease and it's the life form is starting to die. But never fear. The ship returns to warp and is on a new course at warp 9 to another white dwarf system. However, no one will be on the ship when it... alive on the ship when it gets there. So we've got to go somewhere else. And how do they do it? They don't tap in on the computer. Let me take you here. No, they go have to go back to the holodeck and convince the conductor, we know a shortcut. Can you trust us? And surprisingly, the conductor does. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Data the conductor. Okay, so we arrive at that new, where was it they were looking to go? Some kind of another white dwarf system, and when they arrive there, the solution. It's going to be hard to figure this one. No, I've got the solution. Fire a torpedo, and it will produce the Verderon particles, which makes the life forms happy, and they make their new home. Yes.
And then everything is reversed to where it started at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, Troy has a few bruises from all those bricks hitting her, but beyond that, yeah. It seems like that was the solution. It's
nothing
it's,
happens.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's a really long build-up, really long explanation of why it's happening, and a very nice, quick torpedo shot and there's some particles for them to suck in. The train conductor's happy. Everybody's going to arrive to new Vertiform City. The old Vertiform City is irrelevant anymore. But it's the new one. We're happy. Lifeform leaves the ship. And Picard tries to philosophize on what this whole thing was about. But let's just tuck tail and run quick before it changes its mind. And I think I'm done.
This one was special.
Okay. How did it happen in the first place? I might have overlooked that, and because I don't recall. How did it snag onto this thing?
What thing?
This life form that got created.
Well, I'm under the impression that the Enterprise computer decided to do this just because.
Oh, I don't think so. Really?
No, that's what they say, right?
Oh,
I feel like that's what they say. This was about there's been, you know, the experience of the computer has been so rich that it effectively has become a living organism that has decided to do this thing this particular week, and then, you know, within a couple of years, right, we blow the ship up and we will move along, and this never comes up again, you know, anywhere else. I suppose it might come up in Alice, right, in the with the AI in Voyager. That's a more interesting premise, but this is just, you know, there is no external stimulus here, right? This is just the ship decided to do it for some reason this week.
Okay, so that's pretty much emergence. So what really emerged in our thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5? Unless you guys have more.
I don't need the scale extended, no. I think we're good for this year, this week.
Good.
I'll fit within the 1 to 5 scale, don't worry.
Oh, I'm sure I will too. Actually, you know something I just realized in my notes that I took? I didn't even give it a rating or even give it a final thought, because I really don't want to think about this anymore. I'm going to just start then. It's a silly little train ride. I think it could have been done better. But it's just
silly
makes
little train ride.
Silly
I see
little
what you
train
did
ride. Yes. It's a train ride. Whether it's, Vertiform City, Keystone City or New Vertiform City, it doesn't matter. I fell off the train somewhere around the middle of it. I never did have a ticket. I jumped on the train when I wasn't supposed to, but, you know, to try and get a free ride. I got caught and I was tossed off the train, and that's pretty much where this episode is. Tossed off the train. So I have to make up a rating right now. 1 to 5. 1 to 5. Oh, this sucked. I'm going 1, personally. I've given that a lot of thought in the last 15 seconds. And, damn it, I lost sleep over it. But yes, I'm going to 1. Yeah. Who wants to join me? Raise your hand. Oh, that's right. This is audio. Speak.
So,
if this was Zoom, you would have a raise your hand option.
Yeah, this little button and everything.
How about how about a sound effect we create for, you know, the wonderful 1 being, or, you know, 5 being yay, or da 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 da, and we'll figure out the sounds in between. Go on.
Okay. In my mind, this isn't excrement, right? I don't know what sound you want to be making for the 1 out of 5. Now, I think this lands as 1 out of 5. I have to say, but hear me out for a second. This TNG has become very digestible, right? I think this is a poor episode. I don't think they do really anything interesting. And I think that it has a cringe of certain things that I don't like about TNG, including, you know, holodeck for the sake of holodeck, and other kind of, you know, other tropes that I spoke about. Having said this, I think this is, it's quite easy to consume, right? There's always something that's going on. It's not painful like the first season episodes were. It moves pretty quickly. You go from scene to scene. Everyone knows what they need to do. Everyone's talking in the right way. And it almost feels like an autocomplete episode where someone put together a very, very outline of a script and minor outline of a script, and they kind of filled the rest in. So TNT, it is nice and it does work, and you can get like, you can at least get something out that is not, you know, stab yourself in the eye. I want to get off. But having said that, I suspect this must be the worst. Is this the worst episode of TNG? What I'm trying to say here, I think this is the worst episode of TNG, but really well polished. And the polish you get after having done 7 years of it. I think had you tried to do something like this earlier, it would have been much more painful. Anyway, look, you know, it is what it is. The only way is up now. I'll hand it a 1 out of 5.
Well, if you think that this is the worst episode, then you get no vaccine and no Tasha Yar. Lieutenant Yar. I'm taking away your vaccine and your Tasha Yar.
Really? I think that episode had like tension, right? You wanted to make sure that Tasha won the battle, and there was fighting and poking them with the glove thing, and then there was a reveal at the end, and it turned out, aha, the guy isn't in charge, and he gets kicked out because the woman survived, and there's like, that's awesome, right? I mean, yeah. What do we take away from this episode?
Well, this episode could have been in another future Shades of Grey.
I mean, I think Shades of Grey is not that bad.
Do you think
it's not that bad?
Who's going to get bitten in the leg and have to relive this moment? Any takers?
Do you think that's what they should do? They should get, you know, everyone always complains about Shades of Grey because they only have like 2 seasons worth of stuff to shove into the episode. But do you think they should have ended the entire run with Shades of Grey or a Shades of Grey like clip show? So finish with All Good Things, and after All Good Things, Shades of Grey Part 2.
There you go.
Shades Absolutely. Of Grey Redux.
That's a good idea. And if you think this is bad, well, see, you're lucky, Doc. You found your perfect mate. There was another one that was just... Do you remember that, guys? We all three gave the perfect mate a 1-star rating.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't give 1-star ratings.
Oh, yes, you did. Season 5, episode 21. Go back and watch. Listen to the end. You'll give it a 1.0. And matter of fact, you gave 1.1 star to Violations as well.
So the odd, I must have been odd thing in a silly mood. As soon as you tell me about Perfect Mate, I go and Google Famke Janssen to see, you know, what she's up to these days. And the third thing on autocomplete is Famke Janssen death. And she's not dead, but I have no idea why that's the third most popular searched thing.
Yeah, Chris, I'm finding like 3 that you were in a surly mood. Man of the People was another 1-star rating.
Wow. Well, yeah. That takes all the scorch out of my opening line.
Okay, so Chris, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris. Your turn.
even Star Trek that is listless and lacks a purpose and doesn't deliver on any of its premises that it may or may not have promised, even when it does that, it is still Star Trek. It is still Next Gen, and Next Gen is really fun to watch, man. I can't not watch it when it's on the screen. I love Next Gen so much. I think the aesthetic is beautiful. I think the characters are fun. They're well formed. They don't change much, you know, and little tiny changes that they have can go away in a moment's notice, like we talked about earlier. But it is like comfort food for me at this point in my life. And so you know, I have to think that Next Gen, no matter what it is going to be at least a 2-star, and this one definitely delivers on that. It's no better than a 2-star. It's not middling. It's not, if you're really paying attention, it doesn't fulfill any promises or any, it doesn't do any good deeds, but it is there and it exists. It looks like the rest of Star Trek and it feels like the rest of Star Trek, the Next Gen. And so for that, I'm going to give it a 2.
Okay.
And I'm going to retroactively turn all those ones that I gave a 1 to a 2, except for Code of Honor, which gets a 0.5.
Oh, you want to change? Oh, yeah, nobody was on for Code of Honor. I'll put Chris retro grade 0.5. Okay. All right, Doc, I heard a... Go on.
No, we're not allowed to retrospectively change.
No.
Not allowed.
No, we're not. Well, no, actually, I think I did on... I think we did, like, the first season, you know, when things like the sizzle was a saying that we used that we haven't used in years. But yeah, no, I think we did retroactively change, like, oh, I can't believe I did that. Make it a 2 or something. But anyway. Okay, they're locked in. Your votes are locked in. And so... All right, folks, here we are coming down to the last regular episode before the finale. And, yeah, if it felt like we got here too fast, you know, like, this was really quick getting through this whole series. If you feel that way, get a brain scan, because it wasn't. It this took forever. But anyway, I've beat that horse already enough. Chris, I'm sure we're going to talk to you again. I'm even sure that it's going to be the next episode.
Wait, did I get on? Did I get put on that one?
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, you're all on right. You're closing out the show for us.
Well, mm-hmm. This is a good one. Definitely not going to give that one a 1.
The last one? Oh, what about next one? Preemptive Strike. So everyone...
That one's definitely going to be a 7. 7 star.
7 star. Wow. 7 out of 5. Alright. Well, hey, you know, you could do, if you ever wish to go back through our run, there was a episode that Doc gave just like, I don't know, 42 stars or something. He just threw that out like, oh, 42. But I can't find it anymore.
What was the episode that completed life, that, you know, explained life, the universe, and everything in it?
You remember that or something? Wait a minute. What?
No. Chris is just mentioning that 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything from Hitchhiker's Guide.
Ah! Okay. I was going to say, you have been listening. Okay, no. He tossed out some goofy number, and I actually I put it in there and came up with, you know, he was giving it like 22 stars out of 5 and an average, but then I, you know, I changed it back. But I wish I could find that again without having to go through 7 seasons of this show. Listening to myself sucks. So, anyway. Go ahead, Doc. Anything?
The only thing I was going to mention is that it was a good friend from north of the border was on with us that day. So that was with Sean Vanderloo. I do not recall which episode it was for, but I know that Sean was with us. Just in case, instead of going through 7 seasons, you could just want to go through the episodes with Mr. Vanderloo.
Well, there's a Samaritan Snare. You gave it a 4.
No, it wasn't that one.
No.
It would have been... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
The most toys...
Riveting listening. For those of you who care to watch some sci-fi where terraforming is a central portion of its premise, you could always watch Firefly. I know that Joss Whedon has been tossed out and canceled by some, but he did write a pretty decent television show years ago set in the whole universe. And one of the main premises of that is that they terraform these planets after they ruined Earth's atmosphere and the planet here. They went to other galaxies on sleeper ships and had terraforming technology, except that they could only terraform a planet in like one way. So you would get like a full desert planet, or you would get like a full forest planet. So anyway.
Actually, Firefly is still on my backlog of stuff to watch. I have it on disc.
It is absolutely one of my favorite of all time. And it won't take you long. I mean, it's only 14 episodes.
Yeah, okay. let me ask you a question here, because okay, I'm under the impression that there's a bit of controversy about the order of the episodes.
Yeah.
Do I have to be worried about that? Do I have to?
No. So the way that the discs
ahead of time,
the way that the discs have them laid out is how you should watch them. The way that Fox aired them is the controversy. So Fox aired the second episode first, and then aired random episodes in the middle in different orders. So it was just all wonky. They shot themselves in the foot in something that would have ended up being probably a hit for them if they'd have seen it through.
Okay, so I don't have to worry about that. I just go on, you know, effectively like production or some like very, very well known consensus order, and we're good. It should be on the one on the disc.
Yeah, the order on the disc is perfectly fine.
Cool.
Okay. Well, then, while you guys were talking, I did a little more looking, and it's probably going to be either the Wounded or Eyeborg. Those are
it's the Wounded.
It is. Okay. All right. Maybe I'll go through that sometime and see what your rating was. So, everybody,
clip out that portion and play it at the beginning or end of all your episodes. Just remember that time that Doc said.
No, but by the way, I assume this is the case because the Wounded, I would have easily given the Wounded 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. It's one of my favorite episodes. Uh-huh. I'm less sure that I would have ever, you know, my instinct is that I'd be coming in with Eyeborg at between a 3 and a 4. Mm. Maybe if we had a really good discussion, I might have been pushed up, but I don't think it's, you know, Wounded is better than Eyeborg.
Yes. Yes. But there's, you know, 5.9, but you still have to call it a 5 since it's a 1 to 5. And then there's 5.1. But yes, Eyeborg, you did give a 5 too. So, must be the Wounded. So, all right. Anyway, Chris needs to go cook. I need to go work. Doc, you need to go sleep.
That's right.
Funny how that works out for all of us. So, join us next time as we review episode number 24, and that's Preemptive Strike. And I think we'll have Chris on, if I can get a hold of him. But we'll also have Chris on.
Kieran and Chris.
Yeah, that's true.
Kieran
McDuff and Mr. Johnson. There you go. All right, so take care, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.